16th chapter, text number 34.
यो वै ममाभिभरमासुरवंशराज्ञा मक्षौहिणीशतम पानुददात्मतन्त्रः त्वां दुस्तमूनपदमात्मनि पौरुषेण सम्पादयन् यदुषु रम्यम् अभिब्रत् अङ्गम् यो वै ममाधिभरमासुरवंशराज्ञा अक्षौहिणी शतमपानुददात्मतन्त्रः त्वां दुस्तमूनपरमात्मनि पौरुषेण सम्पादयन् यदुषु रम्यम् अभिभ्रदङ्गम् यो वै ममातिभरमासुरवंशराज्ञा अक्षौहिणी शतमपानुददात्मतन्त्रः त्वां दुस्तमूनपदमात्मनि पौरुषेण सम्पादयन् यदुषु रम्यमभिव्रदङ्गम् यो वै ममातिवरमासुरवंशराज्ञा अक्षौहिणी शतमपानुददात्मतन्त्रः पान्दस्तमोनबलवात्मनि पौरुषेण त्वां दुस्थमानपदमात्मनि पौरुषेण यो वै ममातिभरमासुरवंशराज्ञा शतमपानुददात्मतन्त्रः त्वां दुस्थमो नमदपात्मनि पौरुषेण यो वै ममातिभरमासुरवंशराज्ञा
माताजी
आत्मतंत्र है। आत्मानि पौरुषेण संपादयन् यदुचुरं यमभिप्रदंग यः हि हु वै सडनली मम माइन अतिभरम टू बर्डनसम आसुरवंश अनबिलीवर्स राज्ञाम ऑफ द किंग्स अक्षौहिणी One military division, shatam, hundreds of such divisions, apanudat, extirpated, atmatantraha, self-sufficient, tvam, unto you, dustam, put into difficulty, unapadam, devoid of strength to stand, Atmani, internal, Paurushena, by dint of energy, Sampadayan, for executing, Yadushu, in the Yadu dynasty, Ramyam, transcendently beautiful, Abhibrat, accepted, Angam, body. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy in the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Purport. The Asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement. And thus Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. By increase of the Asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted asuras and to re-establish the true principles of religion. This was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. Om Ajnana Hare Krishna. We are reading from the chapter, How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. In this conversation between the personality of religion, dharma, and the personality of bhumi mata. Here is a discussion where she is saying, oh, personality of religion, she is addressing the bull, or she is addressing in her conversation, all these verses are talking about Bhumi expressing her heart after the Lord had returned to his abode. She is saying, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition. She is telling about religion, dharma. Weakened in your standing strength. So Lord came as Lord incarnated by his internal energy in the family of Yadus to relieve you. So Prabhupada explains about how the Asuras, they want to enjoy a life of sense gratification,
even at the cost of others' happiness. There is a category of people who certainly aspire for happiness in their life, but they don't mind others being happy. Let I be happy and you also be happy. This is called a sajjan. Sajjan, the difference between sajjan and durjan is, sajjan is a person who wants others to be happy and himself to be happy also. And durjan is a person who wants to enjoy happiness at the cost of others' happiness. They delight in others' suffering. That is their mentality, as explained here. So, this kind of desire for aspiration for happiness comes when one does not care about how one's happiness affects others. Just like in a pond, if you throw some stones at different places, they will produce some ripples. But as you throw bigger and bigger stones, the ripples will become bigger and bigger. And then they start colliding with the other ripples which come from other points. Then there is a collision. When there is a collision, then they all get affected. In the same manner, we are living in a material world where there are innumerable living entities all expressing their desires. So the desires can be compared to throwing stones in a pond. Somebody has a small desire, somebody has a bigger desire, somebody has a very huge desire. So that is like the desire aura coming out of individuals. So when such desires are expressed, sometimes the intensity of strong desire of a living entity is so great that they influence others, that they harm others. That is why there is a quarrel between an individual and another individual, or one family and another family, or one state and another state, or one country and another country. There are quarrels at a local level, at a global level. There are fights, sometimes even interplanetary quarrels between demons and demigods. You find that. And this is the main cause, because one of the prime causes mentioned in the scriptures is that this whole universe is called as one family. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. So that was the famous verse. I am Nija Paroveti Gananam Lagu Chetasam. Udara Charitanam Tu Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. It is said, this whole problem of quarrel starts how? I am Nija Paroveti. This is mine and that is yours. When you put a demarcation line, when two brothers, sometimes in a joint family you find, you know, father and sometimes even grandfather, great-grandfather, sometimes the sons, all of them live together very happily in one family. If you go to any such joint family and ask them, is there any understanding amongst all of you to whom the property belongs to? You know, and in case there is any quarrel in the family, how it is going to be divided? Many of them will say they don't know anything. They just live very peacefully. That one big man with a big turban, the head of the family, he is a fellow who is in control and everyone follows him. And they also know if he passes away, next to him, there is his younger brother or somebody, and we will follow him. And they have no problem. They never talk about money. They never talk about my land. My money, your money, this is my room, your room. They don't talk about all that. They all live in one family together. But in the recent times, we are finding there is a clash amongst families, as even joint families, because the people have become lagu-chetasam. Lagu-chetasam means very mean-minded. That is the meaning of lagu-chetasam, mean-minded. Mean-minded means very narrow-mindedness, of becoming very calculative, in thinking of what is mine and what is yours. That kind of mean-mindedness, narrow-mindedness, which is centered around I and mine. I and mine. This starts actually even from childhood. Children keeping the toys with themselves, claiming it to be theirs. It begins with that. And as we grow up, This is my bench, this is my seat, this is my possession, my property. Then grown-up people quarrel for land, this is my land. Similarly, in offices, people may even claim privileges. These privileges are mine. So the I and mine is the root cause of this quarrel, which is explained here, which begins at an individual level. And sometimes in order to enjoy this I and mine, somebody can form groups also. People of similar interests can club up together and they can form a group. Like for example, people of the same caste. We belong to Dalit community, or we belong to Brahmana community. We belong to some particular caste people. They form groups and they understand that all of us have like-minded interests. So we are considered downtrodden in society, so we will fight against the society. And we will claim our rights. So they form Mahila Sangha, Women's Rights Association. They form, because we are all women, we want rights. So they form a group. Similarly, people of same language can form a group. People of the same state can form groups. In this way, then people of the same country can form groups. In this way, you will find that I and mine, it can expand up to that. It can expand in this way to forming different groups, and the quarrels can be multiplied. And they keep increasing like this. That is why he says, I am Nija Paroveti Gananam Laguchitsam. Prahlad Maharaj hated this thoroughly. When he went to the school, Gurukula's teachers taught him how to distinguish between friends and enemies. These people are demons are your friends, and suras are your enemies. Why? Because the demigods always side with Vishnu, and we are demons. We are always opposed to Vishnu. So these other demons are your friends, and the suras are enemies. And Prahlad didn't like it. He said, what is this friend-enemy business? Ultimately, every jiva, every soul is a part and parcel of Krishna. So he saw everyone equally. So this is this consciousness of being fair in dealings and equanimity of seeing all the living beings as part and parcels of Vishnu or Krishna. This is one quality that anybody who is aspiring to offer shelter has to learn. It is a great challenge. All of us in our lives also, it's likely that we have not given up material consciousness, due to which we may perceive things from material point of view. This is my person, this is my man, that is his man. These are my people, they are different type of people. Like it is possible, due to our mean-minded consciousness, we can say, we are Hindi group, they are English group. We are uneducated group, they are educated group. We can see like that. It is very much possible. We can, or we are one guru's disciples, they are some other guru's disciples. I am Nija Paroveti, Gananam Laguchetasa. We are ISKCON, they are Gaudiamat. Or we are Hindus, they are Christians and Muslims. As if, they are worse than dogs or cats. We are Indian-skinned people. They are white-skinned Americans. All this racism, all these things started because of this only, I and mine consciousness. So, Paramahamsa Bhagavat, he is in a very elevated consciousness where he can completely transcend all these barriers. He can stay at a position where he can treat all the living beings very warmly, treat them like equal. Like we say, Shivanand Sen, he gave compassionately shelter to even a dog, and he could treat a dog as a Vaishnava. But sometimes we end up treating a Vaishnava like a dog because of mean-minded, narrow-minded conception. So that kind of narrow-minded viewpoint leads to quarrels and clashes and misunderstandings. Sometimes, as it is explained here, the asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, even at the cost of others' happiness. Sometimes one is so much oriented towards one's own enjoyment and happiness because of this groupism that one may want to enjoy even at others, at the cost of others' happiness. You can see Hitler. Hitler, he had a conception that the Jews are the source of trouble. The Jews should be finished. So he started gassing them, putting them in gas chambers. Millions of them. Millions of them he killed. So the whole Jewish community, he had thought that, you know, if I wipe out the Jewish community, then only the world can be happy. That was his idea. He started wiping out, killing in millions of them. Stalin also. Stalin is even a bigger demon. Even 30 million people. Hitler killed 10 million people. So these are all people who killed millions and millions of people because of the racism, because of aversion against a certain race, like the quarrel we find between blacks and whites, between the black people, how they were mistreated and treated like slaves. That is also due to racism. So when the asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, they try to enjoy even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. See, the Vedic life, of course, says that this material world is a place of misery. And it is temporary. But even after saying this, the Vedas still say, even in this world of misery, we can keep our life peaceful. So when is the life accepted as peaceful? When the goal is eternal. If you have an eternal goal in mind, then one can aspire to live a peaceful life. And it is meaningful. Because if one is aspiring to quit this world and go, then, for example, if somebody has a term in the jail, say you have to spend time in the jail, another 6 months or something, and you are clear that you are going to become a gentleman, you are never going to commit any more criminal activities, and you don't want to do any thievery in future, you have become very clear about it, then you are aspiring to live a peaceful life in the jail is meaningful, because your heart is transformed. And then if you are trying to make a comfortable situation within the jail, it's not a problem. But if somebody wants to make this jail a comfortable place, but wants to keep on committing crime, he's a fool. Because he will again and again keep coming in the jail. So that is why the Vedas say that certain type of behavior, a certain type of lifestyle can keep us peaceful even within this material world. The Vedas say that. Like, for example, natapai abhibhuyate. That's the word used in Bhagavatam. That you will not be forced to suffer the trivida tap. Natapai abhibhuyate. When gunadikan mudam lipset. You meet people who are senior to you, elder to you. Gunadikan mudam lipset. You should be jolly to receive them with their good qualities. Don't feel envious of them. Then he says, anukrosham gunadamat. And when you see people who are inferior to you, you have compassion for them, sympathy for them. Don't try to ridicule them or stamp on their heads. Anukrosham gunadamat. Maitrim samanad anvichayin. He says that make friendship with your equals and learn to share and care rather than to brag about your own glory or greatness. It says, if you do this, you don't have any sufferings in this world, especially in interpersonal relationships with people. If you can expertly follow this, then you won't have any mental sufferings, especially adibhautika klesh. You'll be finished if you can follow this three. But we refuse to follow this three. So Prabhupada explains, when you look at a senior, you feel envious, When you look at a junior, you feel like ridiculing or lording over or exploiting them. When you see an equal, you want to brag about yourself. Then we suffer. That's how suffering arises. So in this way, to live peacefully in this world means to follow the laws of God. When you follow the laws of God, then most of the sufferings are finished. Like four related principles, one follows. Most problems are gone. Like you see, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, these are potential disturbers of the mind. They can create havoc in one's life. And most people who suffer terribly, if you take a closer look at their life, they are breaking one of this, you'll find. So as soon as one follows this strictly, to the extent you follow it strictly, to that degree your mind will be free from anxieties. But if somebody is following it partially and sometime following, sometime not following, to that degree they will suffer also. So the Vedic life gives a first class program for a happy body, mind and soul. How to keep the body hale and healthy, how to keep the mind peaceful, and how to keep the soul spiritually engaged in a way by which the soul can be elevated back to the spiritual world. That is the program of Vedic life. That is why in the Vedic life, the goal of the Vedic life is Varnashrama, if you see. People, like Prabhupada says in one place, you know, if you have grains to eat and milk to drink, what more do you need? So somebody may ask, is the goal of life just eating? You eat grains and drink milk and sleep. We want to achieve economic development. We want to, you know, do something great. We want to have big shopping malls. We want to have big enterprises, industries. You know, you are saying just eat grains and drink milk and take rest. So why Prabhupada says like that? If you understand the ultimate goal of life, the ultimate goal of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. And in order to go back to Godhead, the body that we have, material body, it's a useful tool. It's a useful instrument. And how can you keep this body intact, you know, healthy enough for fulfilling that purpose of going back to God? For that you need some nice food to eat and a nice environment where you can peacefully execute spiritual life. That's all you need. That's why we find in our ISKCON temples, if you provide nice prasad, a nice accommodation, and then you present a nice spiritual program, lot of people come. Thousands and thousands of people come. Because actually nobody needs anything more than this. You have to eat two or three times a day and study the scriptures. Tune yourself to the knowledge of the scriptures. Understand that I am not the body, I am entrapped in this body, struggling with my mind and senses. So how I can stop this struggle for existence? By following the laws of God. By harmonizing my life with Krishna, whatever God says. And live according to that. Even in this world, we can live like spiritual world. Dijivishet shatam sama, Ishupanishad says. Hundreds of years you can live in this world without any anxiety. Peacefully you can live. As if you are living in the spiritual world. One can live like that. Even while living in this world. There's no anxiety. You don't even think when the death is going to come. You don't think, you know, can I live a little longer? No. You live in this world as if you are living in eternity. You don't feel much difference if you follow the laws of God. But on the other hand, people in the name of economic development, they have become afflicted by greed. As Prabhupada uses the word personal aggrandizement, he says. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement. And because of this, the Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. Some years ago, probably a decade ago, in the West, in America, there was a big protest by the youth of America against some of the bombs and some of the nuclear weapons that were created. So now many of the countries are keeping Star Wars prepared, ready to attack the other continents. So similarly, one such nuclear bomb, when it was created, they had made a information available for the people. How, if this bomb is dropped, what will be the effect? what kind of deep crater it will create in the ground for such a very huge radius, and how many thousands of people will be killed by that, just like Hiroshima Nagasaki bomb drop. Even after decades, the effect of the nuclear bomb is still there, and people are suffering because of the radioactive influence all over. So Prabhupada used to say that who are the scientists? The scientists are also vulnerable human beings, and they belong to a particular country, and they identify with the country in which they are born. Like people born in India, Indian scientists, they want to make bombs for India. And you know, scientists born in America, Russia, they want to make for their respective countries. So naturally, every country is going on increasing its defense measures more and more and more. And then because of the greed element, because of wanting to lord over, there is going to be a fight, throwing bombs at each other. And that is how, unless the educated people go beyond this iron mine mentality of my country, your country, my state, your state, there is a great possibility of a third war. Prabhupada writes one of his purports. So, what is this personal aggrandizement? Just like Alexander, he was going on expanding his kingdom, going from one country to another country. And in this way, at one point of time, he had desired that I want to rule over the entire earth. I want to. And what he achieved, all his life, he was moving from one place to another place along with the soldiers and conquering kingdoms and labeling that this is my kingdom. He put a label there, put a tag. Now this country has become mine. This state has become mine. And then he went on and on and on and on. At one point of time, in one such place when he was passing in India, he passed away. He died. Now what has he carried with him? Think about it. Like if you see, that's why Alexander had declared to his people, when I am taken to the graveyard, keep my hands open. He said, why? Because I never brought anything in this world with me. Nor am I carrying anything with me. What am I accumulating? Now we may say, no, I am not like Alexander. I am not so greedy, you know, for the land. We are not greedy for the land, but we are greedy for money. We want to accumulate money, more and more money. And people work very hard to accumulate. And they get some secret happiness when they see their bank balance bulging more and more. Everyone. But what sort of happiness is that happiness? Because all the collected money will be taken away at the time of death. And we'll be left with bare hands. And we don't know where we are going. So one has to think deeply about these things. That is also greed. Greed for money, greed for gold, greed for silver, greed for wealth. And greed for increasing one's influence over the people. And greed for having more and more followers. I have so many followers, so many people. I have so many fans. I have influence over so many hundreds and thousands of people. Even that, all these things. This kind of greed, all these things are included in personal aggrandizement. In the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there is a very nice description of this personal aggrandizement, what Prabhupada is explaining here, which you can see from the life of one great demon, who is Kamsa. So when Kamsa heard from Narada that very soon Krishna is going to come and kill him, he became very frightened. On the other hand, he was also very proud about his own power. So immediately, he ordered the Keshi demon. Keshi, at once go to Vrindavan and kill Krishna and Rama. Rama is the Balram. He told him, kill both of them. So that was the first thing he did, as soon as he heard from Narada. Narada reminded him, so he heard it, and immediately he sent Keshi. After sending Keshi, he came back to his court, and he started scheming, making some plans for his future. For how to, two things. One is how to wipe out all his enemies by making a strategic plan. And at the same time, how to enjoy, you know, being completely autonomous and being supreme. So he was making plan for that. So he was calling Chanur, Mushtik, Shala, Toshala, all the great wrestlers, he called them. And they all came. And he told them that I would like to arrange a wrestling match. In this wrestling match, we'll bring Krishna Balaram. And all of you, those who have such great strength, in the name of wrestling and playing with Krishna Balaram, you should kill them. So they should not know that we are calling to kill them, but our goal is to kill them. But in the name of wrestling and playing, you should kill them off, he told them. And then he told them that to make a very beautiful wrestling arena with all, like a stadium, with all the seats arranged very nicely. So why he said that? Because he wanted Krishna Balaram not to become unnecessarily fearful. He thought that they may not come. So he wanted to make it look like a game, like some kind of match. So they will surely come. So he told them to arrange like that. And then after they went, then he called the elephant man, Kovalapid, one was maintaining Kovalapid. He said, "My dear good man, come here." He said, "Krishna and Balaram need not have to go to wrestling arena at all. Because even before they go, at the entrance of the wrestling arena, you should keep the Kovalapid ready." So, and Kovalapid has such a strength, it is like personified death. It can kill Krishna Balaram at once. So keep him prepared, ready. And he said, this, in case Krishna Balaram escaped this Kovalapid, who is like personified death, then they will be at the hands of the four wrestlers, Chandar, Mushtik, Shaltoshal, who are like lightning and thunderbolt. They will finish him. In either of these two, they will be gone. They will be dead, he said. And he said also that let us perform the Dhanu Yajna for Lord Shiva, where we will offer, we'll slaughter many animals. And let this sacrifice be performed with the good intention of wiping out Krishna and Balaram. He said, let it be oriented towards that, so that it will bring victory to us. So he had arranged all these things. And then he called Akrura. And he was telling Akrura, see what he tells to Akrura. Ugrasenam chapitaram staviram rajya kamukam tad bradaram devakam cha yecha anje vidvishomama. He is telling, my dear Akrura, Ugrasenam chapitaram, after this Krishna Balaram will be killed, then I will kill their father Vasudev also. And after Vasudev is killed, then all the lamenting relatives and all the other dynasties like Dasharha, Vrishnis, Andaka, all these dynasties, Bhoja dynasties, I will wipe them out, finish, because they will all be having no strength. I will finish them all. And then he says, and also, here is my old father, Ugrasena. Stavira means old. He's saying, he's Rajya Kamukam. He's very greedy for ruling the kingdom. He's telling about Ugrasena. So I will kill him also, he's saying. And saying, Tad Brataram Devakam. And he has a brother, Devaka. I will kill him also. Yech Anye Vidvishomaman. Anybody who opposes my rule, he says that I will kill them all. Yech Anye Vidvishomaman. Tatashchaisha Mahi Mitra Pavitri Nashtakantakaha. He says, then my dear friend Akrura, he says, Pavitri Nashtakantaka, then the Bhumi will be free from all thorns. All these enemies will be destroyed. He's saying. And then he says, Jarasandha Mama Guru. And Jarasandha is my favorite master. He also says, Duvido Daita Saka. Duvida is a very dear friend of mine. So I have solid friendship with Duvida and Jarasandha, he says. They are my. And then he says, Shambaro Narako Bano Mayyeva Krita Sauhrudaha. And all these people are Sauhrudaha, means well-wishers. Who all? Shambara, Naraka and Bana. Shambara. And Shambara, you know, who is the Shambara demon? One who devoured that child. Pradyumna, is it? in the ocean. Shambhara demon in the ocean. Who was that? No, Shambhara demon. And then the fish was brought to Shambharasura. That is Asura, Shambharasura. Shambharo, Narako, Bano, Narakasur, Banasur. Mayeva Krita Sauhurdahad. All these are my solid well-wishers. They always they support me. Thai Raham Surapakshiyan Hatva Bokshe Mahim Drupan. Now using all these friends of mine, I will kill all those who are siding the demigods. And then I will enjoy unrivaled kingdom all over this earth alone, with no one to oppose me. So these are the words of whom? Kamsa. Kamsa was telling these things to Akrura. Then he told Akrura, Akrura, you are my very dear friend. And then he called him and he showed him a rath, which was a new rath. And he told, Anena Ratham, he said, here is a very new golden chariot. So Kamsa thought that, you know, Akrura is a very innocent person. He is a simple person, an innocent person. So he thought if I give him a gold chariot, he will very happily take it and immediately go to bring Krishna Balaram. So he showed him the gold chariot. And at the same time, what was going on in the mind of Akrura, do you know? Akrura was thinking. Akrura also smiled when Kamsa showed the new chariot. His smile had a deep reason. He thought that why should Krishna Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sit in a used rath, which has been earlier used by the devil Kamsa, by the wicked Kamsa. So let this new rath be taken so that let it be used by them. So he was smiling in that connection, which was unknown to Kamsa. So after that, you see what Akrura answered. Of course, he told Akrura that these are my great and grand plans, Akrura. Now you go. This Krishna and Balaram are hiding in the forest of Vrindavan. And every time I send a demon to kill them, they have been escaping. And they have killed all the demons whom I sent till now. Now I think if we bring them out of the forest, it will become easy for us to kill them. That was his idea. He thought that these are like vanacharis. Like we sing Yamuna Vanachari. They are forest dwellers. Every time you go to kill them, they are like a guerrilla warfare. They hide behind the bushes and they hit. And I cannot kill them. Once I bring them to Mathura, and then with my men and power, I will destroy them. That was his idea. So he asked Akrura, you go and fetch them. You know what Akrura says? He says, Manorathan karoti uchair jano daivahatanapi. Manorathan means, you know, a mental concoction. Manorathan karoti uchair. Uchair means very fervently. There are many people in this world who fervently dream about great things in life. I will do this. I will do that. Next I will do this. After this, I will achieve this. In this way, I will become famous. In this way, I will become powerful. In this way, I will become influential. In this way, so many big people, I will bring them under my control. This kind of idea. Actually, see, these things are generally set for the demons. But even after we become devotees, the demoniac qualities are not wiped out from our hearts. Because we are neophyte devotees, we are growing devotees, it is very likely that such kind of mentalities are hidden in our hearts also. So reading these pastimes, hearing these pastimes will really purify those tendencies. So there is a desire in all the tiny, insignificant living entities' heart to be the lord and master of all that they survey. In every field, the dog thinks, I'll be the master of this lane. I'll control everyone in this lane, isn't it? So in this way, every living entity wants, Prabhupada says, even a rat thinks, I have a hole. Which is his house. He thinks it's my house. And I will go and fetch some bread, crumb, and bring it and keep it in my hole. In this way, I will be very happy. But whenever he goes to fetch the bread, there is a threat of being killed by a stick. Somebody, tack, they beat on the ground and immediately runs into the hole. And what kind of master is he? He's living at the threat of being killed always. And Prabhupada says, a man is thinking, now after so many years, I have got my own bungalow. My own piece of land. I have got this much plot and I have made a beautiful bungalow. Now I have a garage in which I have my own car. Now I have a house, I have children, and this is my small kingdom. And I can live very happily here. But then in order to fetch money and bring money, there is so much hard work involved in maintaining that bungalow or maintaining that small kingdom. Isn't it? And Prabhupada says, similarly, Brahma. Brahma thinks, this is my Brahmanda. Actually, Brahma, you can easily understand, Brahma is the number one man in the whole Brahmanda. This is my Brahmanda and I am ruling it. And all living entities are under my custody. I give them all bodies. I create all species. So Prabhupada thinks every living being has this mentality of mastership and not servitorship. And what is wrong with such planning, or what is wrong with such plan making, that is spoken by Akrura here. What Akrura is saying, Manoratan karoti uchchair. Very fervently the living entities are making plans for their enjoying business. Enjoying plans. How I will enjoy. Everyone is making plans. If I am here, I make plans up to this. If I am here, I make plans up to this. Everyone has, higher and higher plans. Thousandpati wants to become a lakhpati, isn't it? Lakhpati wants to become karodpati. Karodpati wants to become arapati. Arapati wants to become karapati. Karapati wants to become lakshmipati. Isn't it? Everyone is trying to become bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not only greed in terms of money. It is also greed for fame, greed for name, greed for influence, greed for power, greed for land. Many things we could say. So, people always are dreaming. These are called as daydreamers. They dream about doing great things in life with great ambitions. So, what is he saying about ambitions? Manorathan, karoti, uchchair. Uchchair means very fervently they make plans. Jano daiva hatan api. Daiva hatan means the will of providence thwarts such dreams, he says. So, daiva or will of providence is an extremely powerful agent who will not allow you to give shape to your dream if it is not in your destiny. Because everyone has a destiny. And according to destiny, the things are happening. You are awarded what you deserve to be awarded. According to your previous life karma. So, no matter how much we make plans and how much we work hard, one will not be able to attain some goal which is not destined for an individual. That's why he is saying, Jano daiva hatan api. Api means even. Even though they know that there is something called destiny, that is deciding what we will enjoy and what we will get, still people keep dreaming, he is saying. Yujyate harsha shoka abhyam tatapi agnyam karomite, he says. So, yujyate harsha shoka abhyam means this is the reason why people are sometimes happy, sometimes sorrowful. Why do we get sorrow? Because without knowing that there is something called destiny, we always make plans. We make very fervent plans for enjoying life, he says. That is why we get shoka, he says. That means one who has a firm faith in destiny will never get shock. Because whatever I am getting is my destiny. And whatever is my destiny only will be given to me, awarded to me. See, this is Vedic life. In Vedic life, you will find people are always contented. There is something called contentment. What is contentment? Contentment is not lack of ambition. Contentment is not complacency. Contentment is not laziness. But contentment is a positive quality which a Vedic follower will have, knowing well that, my endeavor alone cannot bring me all happiness or make my dreams true. Because my endeavor is only one small part. But then there is daiva, there is destiny also. So people had a firm faith in that. They knew that. That's why people would not desire two big things. They'll be contented. So that contentment leads to satisfaction and happiness in life. When you know that this is destiny. So here, why did he speak this verse? Yujyate harsha shoka abhyam tatapi agnyam karamite. He's telling Kamsa, although, my dear master, you are saying that you know, I should go and fetch Krishna Balaram and you have made very grand plans. All these are a mere dream, he's saying. You have made grand plans for destroying all people like, you know, Vasudev, Ugrasen and all these people. Lamenting relatives and all of them. At the same time, you have made grand plans with your own so-called friends. Like Jarasandha and Vivida and Naraka and all these asuras. With them you are planning to enjoy your life unlimitedly. But this is not what is written in your destiny. What is written in your destiny? The eighth son of Devaki will be the cause of your death. That is written in your destiny. And that's going to become true in the time to come. But he is saying, still, tatapi, ajnam karamite. Still I will fulfill your instruction, your ajna. I will fulfill. Anyway, you are telling me to bring Krishna Balaram, I will bring. But he gave an indirect hint to Kamsa that your dreams, your foolish plans will not materialize. You wanted to tell him. But from this section, we understand how, what is the nature of demons? What is the nature of demoniac mentality? You see, Ugrasena is a very elderly person, Kamsa's father. Krishna could have been a king very easily. But Krishna puts Ugrasena in the asana. And he made him the king. And Krishna is standing in front of Ugrasena and reading reports about the happenings in the kingdom. So seeing this, Uddhava's heart is melting. When he sees the sight of, you know, Krishna giving report to Ugrasen, although Krishna is supposed to be the king, he makes Ugrasen the king. But here you find Kamsa offending Ugrasen as an old man. What can this old man do? He is a man who is about to die. He is an old man. I will kill him before he dies. That is his plan. Just see. This demoniac mentality. This demoniac mentality makes us think that we are always young and youthful. And everyone else is old and useless. Like if somebody is younger, then you think, hey, he's a kid, what does he know? If somebody is superior, senior, hey, he is old. He's a gone fellow. He is no more in the picture. What about you? I am the person. See, this is a demoniac mentality. This is demoniac mentality. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tells the story of the monkeys, you know. Like there were old monkeys who were telling the younger monkeys, you know. They said, this is very dangerous to live in this bungalow of the king's palace. You know why? So they were telling that, you know, if you're living here, it's likely that, you know, every day the sheep goes into the kitchen to eat some eatables there. And that fellow in the kitchen takes a firewood and tries to beat the sheep. And it's likely that the sheep may catch fire someday and he may run into the horse stable, and if it runs into the horse stable, and all the horses may get burnt by fire, and they all may scream, and the king and the ministers, and they all need the horses, isn't it? So then, what is the cure for the fire burning on a horse's body? For that, they will need the skin of a monkey, and who are we? We are all monkeys. So the monkey said, hey, living here is very dangerous. They may take our skin and make medicine and apply for the horses. Someday it will happen. So the old monkey said, it's better that we don't live in this palace. But all the younger monkeys said, this old monkey, you see, he is a old, because he is too old, you know, his mind has become a little deranged. He's crazy. He's thinking too far. You know, such things are never going to happen. You know, here in King's Palace we get such nice foods. What kind of delicious preparations we get in the King's Palace. You know, if you go to the forest, you will be eating, you know, nuts and, you know, fruits in the kandamool. That kind of fruits you will be eating in the forest. Better we eat nice, delicious foods and enjoy life here. They said. And the older monkey said, okay, if you want to be here, you'll be here. We are going. And some of the older monkeys, they returned to forest. And sure enough, what happened? Eventually one day the same sequence of events happened. What was predicted by the older monkeys. So the advice of the older monkey is compared to the advice of the Acharya. Acharyas like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Prabhupada. Sometimes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples or Prabhupada's disciples, sometimes minimized their instruction. Sometimes when Prabhupada said you should do it, what the disciples would say, Swamiji has become very old, you know. Old people keep speaking, bluffing something, you know. What they sometimes say this, sometimes they say that, you know. So, you know, we don't have to take it seriously. So, can Acharya be labeled like that, as old? And can his instructions be considered to be less important? Or can his instructions be considered to be something that he is blabbering because of some deranged mind? Such a outlook is offensive. So, this is Jarasandha, this is Kamsa's mentality. He says, Ugrasena Chapitaram, Staviram Rajakamukam. He is calling him a Rajakamuk. Who is Rajakamuk? He is Rajakamuk. He is greedy fellow. He wants to enjoy the kingdom and he is blaming Ugrasena as Rajakamukam. You see? This is why sometimes it is said, if you see some fault in others, it may be a reflection of your own fault. It is said many times. Many times, sometimes we pinpoint faults very strongly in others. We have to check whether we ourselves have that fault. So that is the problem with Kamsa here. So in this way, all the noble souls, he is making a list of them and calling them as his enemies. Devaka, you find Devaka, Vasudev, Ugrasena, all are noble souls endowed with divine qualities. And he is saying that I will kill all of them. He is making a plan to kill all of them. And you see, who are his friends? Jarasandha, Duvida, Shambhara, Naraka, Bana. They are his friends, just see. He is making allies with such kind of demoniac people. And all of them were killed by Krishna. You will see. Narakasura was killed, Banasura. You will find all these people, and they were all defeated and destroyed by Krishna. You find that. But he wants to make friendship with them because birds of the same feather flock together. You see that. It's because of demoniac quality. Because that's the meaning of an asura. Asura means is against the purpose of the Lord. Now, we are not asuras. Like Indra is not asura. Indra is a devata. But Indra sometimes exhibits asuric mentality. Sometimes asuric mentality dominates the heart of even Indra. Similarly, as devotees, it's likely that sometimes we can become afflicted by this kind of mentality. Like he says, Hatva Bokshe Mahim Ripan. I will enjoy your unrivaled kingdom. After killing all these people and after making allies with all these friends, I'll enjoy. Same thing Prabhupada says here, if you see, they have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement. And thus Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. You see? By increase of the asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. Why? What is the problem for Mother Earth in having such people like Kamsa and others? Prabhupada says, when there is lawlessness and criminalism in any state, immediately there is a problem. You see, the police is triggered, the military is triggered, and there is curfew put up in many parts of the country. People cannot go to the marketplace, people cannot go to the railway stations, people cannot go to the temples, because some terrorist has put a bomb somewhere. Now there is a kind of fear everywhere, because there may be time bomb hidden anywhere. Nowadays in trains they put now, if you find a suitcase lying, don't touch it. Immediately report to the railway authorities. They say now, because sometimes you can't think, oh, the suitcase is a beautiful suitcase, if you take it home, there will be a big time bomb which will explode. So they write, immediately report. So when there are criminals like that, and those who break the laws of the country, then the administrators are put into a very tense situation. Then they have to, they become triggered up and they have to work very hard. And quite often we find terrorism, it seems it's almost impossible to eradicate it. Despite all the screening devices, despite all the police force and military force, and police coming in mufti dress and civil dress and all that, still there is terrorism going on in different places. People somehow sneak in and they there are live bombs who kill big political leaders, who who shatter Twin Towers, and these kind of things are going on everywhere. So what happens? There is a tense situation created both for the administrators and for the people. For both of them. Administrators want a peaceful situation in the country. So they want to curb terrorism. But they cannot locate terrorism very easily. Until it is done. So they are in a very tense situation because of the criminals and thieves and rogues and robbers and everyone. At the same time, the people in general, there is a life threat. There is a... It's not only at one time, where was it? It was in Godhra, I think, when this Karsevaks had, demolished some part of the mosque, and they all boarded the train and they were coming back to Godhra, So there were 1,500 people, Muslims, waiting there. They locked all the doors of the train. Two bogies, they set ablaze. And all the people inside, they were all boiling in fire. They just couldn't come out because it was both the bogies were blocked and nobody could come out of it. What a horrible situation, just see. People are burnt to death, alive. And 1,500 people, because these people have their sentiments and those people have their sentiments. And both sentiments are based on fanaticism. They are unfounded in religion. They are unfounded in any Shastric principles. So, when there is a fundamentalist approach or when this kind of fanatic approach comes, whether it be Islam, whether it be Hinduism, whether it be Christianity, whether it be whatever religion it be. So, it is not only a question of religion. Fanaticism, when it appears, it can appear between religions, it can appear between states, between countries, between groups, between companies. In business field, people even murder each other. If you ask the builders, they can tell you. In the field of builders, one builder is big, another builder is becoming even bigger. They become bigger if he's buying plots, if he's buying this. Sometimes they buy thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of land. Sometimes they become greedy for each other. In order to compete them, they even finish them off by killing them. So this is personal aggrandizement. Prabhupada explains how this greed is so bad. So in this way, this terrorism and criminalism and lawlessness, these create a great disturbance in a state. Similarly, this whole universe is also a government. In the whole universe, when the asuras become greedy and they overthrow the power of the demigods and take away their property, or if the asuras start destroying Brahminical culture, by just like you find in the 7th canto, how Hiranyakashipu told his men to go and destroy the Yajnakundas, destroy the hermitages, cut down the fruit-bearing pious trees, and destroy Gopurams, destroy the bridges, and he said, destroy the animals like cows. He said, destroy anything that will lead to Brahminical culture flourishing. Because if they do Yajna and Brahminical culture flourishes, the demigods will become nourished. And if demigods and Vishnu are nourished, then the spiritual culture will probably be propagated more and more. Let Asari culture be propagated. Let all the asuras who do sins, let them go to heaven. Let all the people who do pious activity, let them go to hell. Let asuras drink wine. Let them have illicit sex. Let them enjoy life. That was the plan of whom? Hiranyakashipu. Demoniac culture. So according to them, the demons should flourish. And the devotees and demigods should perish. That is our goal. You can see that. So, in this way, by the increase of Asuric population, the goal of the Supreme Lord in creating this universe is not accomplished. Why the Lord creates this universe and gives facility for the living entities? Because the Lord wants the Brahminical culture to come down in the disciplic succession. And everywhere the living entities, sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu, let all living entities live a happy, peaceful life of Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. Let them all do varnashrama dharma. And let them practice the spiritual principles and dharma artha kama moksha. That's a regular route. Or if one takes to bhakti yoga, then it's an elevator, direct elevator. So one has to follow these things and ultimately attain liberation from this bondage of material existence. That's the goal actually. But the demons thwart the plan of the Lord. That is why the Lord comes to kill them. Why the Lord kills demons? Is he envious of them? Lord cannot be envious because he's a father of both demigods and demons. God is a father. Then why does he punish the demons? Why does he kill them? Lord kills them because the demons are putting a stumbling block in the ultimate purpose of Lord. Lord wants to see that the material world is a good place where the people can practice religious principles and go back to spiritual world. But the demons create a havoc. In the modern times, the demonic culture also is very prominent. We can see, like we find how the cows are slaughtered in millions practically. How the pure principles of religion, tatascha anudinam dharma, satyam, shaucham, dayakshama, kalena balina rajan, nangshati ayuhu balam smriti. That verse says, tatascha anudinam, every day in the age of Kali Yuga. Tatascha anudinam dharma, what happens there to dharma? Satyam, shaucham, dayakshama, all these things. The truth, the cleanliness, the mercy, forgiveness, compassion, all these good qualities, nangshati, they are all diminishing. Ayuhu balam smriti, people's duration of life is reducing, their strength is reducing, their memory is reducing. It's all as the days are proceeding, Kali Yuga things are very degrading. And the culture becomes more and more asuric, and the Lord will come as Kalki avatar and he will destroy all the irreligiosity in the time to come. But as he says here, there is a verse in Kunti's section. Kunti says, Bharavataranayanye bhuvo nava ivo dadau sidantya bhuri bharena jato hyatma buvartitah. She is saying that Mother Earth goes to the Lord and prays that I am overburdened like a ship in an ocean, sometimes is overloaded with goods. When you put too much goods in a ship, the ship will drown. Similarly, the Mother Earth is feeling that I am too much overburdened by the weight of the liars and rogues and thieves and atrocious kings and greedy egomaniacs. She is becoming overburdened by such kind of people. Now, are they having so much weight that Bhumi is not able to tolerate their weight? Actually, what is that weight felt? For example, imagine, in a hall like this, sometimes, 100 devotees can be packed in this hall. We can have 50 devotees sleeping in this hall. It's possible in a hall like this. But if you have to live in the same room with one fellow who is smoking and drinking, who is smoking, drinking, watching some channel, which is pornography channel, he's watching, and you have to live with that one person, it will be like a pinprick for you. It will be very difficult for you. You will be so intolerant. You will think, when will I get rid of this fellow? You will feel such a burden. Although he is only one person. Here you are able to live with 50, 100 people. But with one person, it will be difficult. Similarly, for Bhumi also, she doesn't feel so much burden when there are billions of people on her top. On the surface of the globe, there are so many people. But as long as they follow the laws of God, she considers that burden as a burden of love. Burden of love means, sometimes, like a mother is carrying a heavy child, but the mother doesn't mind the heaviness of the child because she loves the child. Isn't it? Mother, she may not even probably carry a thinner child who is somebody else's child. Isn't it? But in the same manner, Bhumi also, she is a consort of the Lord. So she likes to carry the living entities who follow the laws of Lord. And those who don't follow the laws of God, those who tell lies, those who indulge in irreligious principles. So she considers them like a big burden. Why should I feed food to these rascals and rogues? Why should I see them? Why should I give nourishment to them so that they can work against Lord's purpose? So she considers that as a burden. By increase of asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. Devotees become unhappy to see the asuras, propagating irreligion. Because the devotees are all godly people. They want to fulfill God's mission. So they find out how to propagate Krishna consciousness even in a world of asuric culture. That is devotees' mission. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted asuras and to re-establish the true principles of religion. When dharmasya glani happens, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, it is said. Abhidhanav dharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaj duskritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So in every yuga the Lord appears for the same purpose. So this goes to show one interesting thing. The living entities are vicious and venomous when they are covered over by elements like lust, pride, greed, envy, anger and all that. So their nature is to always go downward. And Lord comes, he performs leelas, he performs pastimes, he kills the demons and he sets the right trend and then he goes back. And then some living entities pick up good things, you know, and they become purified and then they go back to God. Other living entities, they continue to be vicious. And they degraded so much, again the Lord has to come. And again he lifts up, hey, come back to the standard, this is the standard. And again the Lord comes and, you know, sets a trend and everyone starts following for some period of time. Again things go down, you see. That's the nature of the material world. So material, just like a latrine, no matter how much attar you put, it keeps stinking only. Sometimes you put odonil and all that, isn't it? After some time it again keeps stinking only. Similarly, the material world, no matter how much you set things right, again and again there is a nature of going down in this world. But a devotee preacher never gets tired of preaching, thinking that this world is a place of degradation. Anyway, what is going to happen by my effort? No, everyone is a demon in the world, you know. And it is Kali Yuga also now, you know. So better you do your own bhajan. A preacher doesn't think like that. A preacher should preach in such a way as if he is going to make the whole world into a world of devotees. Prabhupada writes in one purport that we don't expect the whole world to become devotees. Of course, if they become, it will be wonderful. But Prabhupada says only a small percentage of the world will become devotees. But that is good enough, Prabhupada says. In one purport, he says, if even 1% of the world population follows the four regulative principles, that will be general. In the general world, there will be peace everywhere, Prabhupada says. One can experience peace. Even if about 10% is anything. 1% or 10%? Sure? Yeah. Even 1% of the population follows the four regulative principles. He says there will be peace of mind for everyone in the world. Can you imagine? So, but why one should preach so vigorously that we should want to establish the type of Brahminical culture that the Lord wants in this world. So if we become instrumental in creating that type of culture, giving an opportunity for more and more suffering souls to come and take shelter and become Krishna conscious, then we will also become very dear to the Lord by being instruments in His hands. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Kaur Bhaktavinda ki. Thank you.